Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Work Lab podcast from Microsoft answers the questions that keep business leaders up at night. Like, how can I reinvent processes for the AI era, from customer service to sales to HR? How can I prepare for AI to fundamentally transform jobs, companies, industries, and the whole economy? Don't panic. Tune in. Each episode of Work Lab brings you the top experts, hard data, and actionable insights to help you future-proof your organization. Check out Work Lab, that's WORKLAB, no spaces, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kyle Kadakia is the founder of ClassPass, a company that lets you book fitness classes at a bunch of different studios for a set price each month. More than 30 million reservations have been made on her platform since she started the company in 2013. ClassPass's last round of financing valued the company at about $400 million. But growing ClassPass to this point hasn't been easy. And Kadakia recently made the tough decision to step down as CEO.
The impact we have on people's lives, to me, is more important than any title anyone can carry. And, you know, the only thing, and I thought a lot about this, was I want little girls to believe that they can be CEOs. The best thing I could do, though, is be an empowered female and authentically doing what I love.
She told us all about founding the company and how she pivoted a struggling startup idea into something really big on this episode of Success, How I Did It. I'm your host and Business Insider's U.S. Editor-in-Chief, Allison Chantel. We have Payal Kadakia here with us today. She created ClassPass. First, let's go back. You're a world-class dancer, right? I mean, you've been dancing since you were little, and that's part of what inspired you to do this company.
Yeah, I started dancing when I was 3 years old in my basement with my mom's best friend. And it was sort of my way of getting to know my culture, but it also became more than that for me. It became this place where I felt like I could be anyone. I felt really centered. I loved it. Dance became this thing that I fought to keep in my life throughout my career, through my college years, because I just felt so alive and so confident when I did it, and so I never wanted to lose it.
You have both sides of your brain going. You also went to MIT.
My parents, you know, immigrated here in the 70s. Like, education, a good career were obviously, like, North Stars for them. And, you know, at the same time, I wanted the discipline. I wanted to make sure I, like, entered the real world in the right way. I loved math and science, so that was sort of, like, the other side of me, and my creative side was really in dance and choreography.
What kind of dance?
So it's Indian folk and classical dance. When I was in school, especially at MIT, like, I even wanted to dance there, so I went and started a dance company that's still on campus today. It's just, for me, when I felt like it didn't exist, I created it. So when I left MIT and I came here to New York, you know, I had my job at Bain, and the first thing I did when I got here was look for where I was going to go take Bollywood dance classes. During my Bain days, like, I would invite my entire company to my shows. You know, it was just, like, one of those things that I think made me pile, and everyone kind of associated me with it. When I was, I would say, entering, like, you know, my third year of Bain, most people at that point decide what they're going to do after, and either they stay at Bain or they go to business school. It's usually the trajectory. I wanted to find a way to dance more and to build something that was, you know, just something more relevant and in the Indian dance space. I took a great job at Warner Music Group. I got to see the entire music industry transform and got to meet amazing people like Daniel Ek at Spotify. I was sort of doing that, like, day job, and every night for, like, 4 hours, I would dance with a group of girls that also were, like, professionals and amazing at their jobs. And we would travel on the weekends and go and perform. And I always remember we ended up on the cover of the art section of the New York Times. And this was, like, 2 years into my Warner experience and maybe 6 months into when I started the company. I didn't even have a website. I remember my boss was like, "Are you going to come to work tomorrow?" Like, I don't know. I think I saw you on the cover of the, you know, art section of the New York Times. I love moments like that because it makes you just realize, like, you can do so much and accomplish so much if you're focused and passionate about what you do.
When we first met, you had joined something called Techstars.
Yep.
And was this, it was called Classtivity at the time, was your startup.
Yep.
And it was a variation of what ClassPass is now. But was that the first company you had? I guess you started the dance company, but that was your first experience with tech.
Outside of building some small models and algorithmic programs at MIT, I really hadn't built something of that kind of scale. And the reason I did it was, I was one day sitting at my desk. I was looking for a ballet class to take, and I was online, and hours had passed by, and I didn't choose what I would do. And at that moment, I was just like, why is this so difficult? Why is there not a website like OpenTable or Seamless Web or ZocDoc that was just aggregating all this information? And that made sense. I think it made sense to a lot of people because I raised $1 million on that concept. And so then when we launched it and no one went to class, that was really hard for me because that was my mission. My mission wasn't to build just a tech website that looked nice and had all the information. It was to get people to actually go to class and pursue their passion and fall back in love with a hobby like I had with dance. I realized that we weren't creating that impact. And so when I came to terms with that, I decided that we should pivot.
So before we get to the pivot, though, let's talk about you. You leave Warner, right?
Yes.
You joined Techstars. How do you get into Techstars? Techstars was this accelerator kind of program where startups would apply, and it was really rigorous. It was hard to get into. David Tisch, who's a big venture capitalist in the New York area, was running it. How did you wind up there doing this?
I had this idea brewing in my head, and the vice chairman of Warner Music Group, Michael Fleischer, called me. He was like, why don't you come up to my office? I'd love to hear about this. And I had maybe met him 3 times in my 3 years there. Ended up spending 2 hours explaining to him what I wanted to build. And he was like, you know what? I love this. He became my investor. And he also was one of the mentors in the Techstars program. So he emailed David Tisch that day. To me, it was about relationships. I mean, I know I did the application and all of it. I really truly believe, though, I got in because people referred me. And I always tell entrepreneurs this, yes, it's about your application. They're going to get thousands, but find a way to really get a good reference, right? Or get someone to support you into the program. And I know I had a lot of people who were vouching for me and being like, I believe in Pyle. I believe in this idea. And I really believe it's because of that.
This company that you were building in Techstars, Classtivity, it's an open table for classes. So you could go on and you could see, okay, I want to take a Pilates class. Here are the places and the times.
It was Be Active and Be Creative. So it had fitness stuff on there. It also had creative stuff on there, cooking classes and photography. And basically you could go on, you could search by genre, then you could pick the time, and then you could, pick the location, and then we would show you all the schedule. So even though it was a different product, it actually helped us during that time build all the integrations into getting all the schedule data. It wasn't easy to do that. I mean, there's so many classes happening all day long, and we were trying to pull in the feed of information to say, here's all the up-to-date information on what's available at every given time. Even though it was a phase of the company where the product didn't work, it actually did help us build a lot of the scheduling integration that we need to on the back end.
So Techstars has this demo day. You're presenting to a room full of investors and journalists and things. I was in the audience listening to you present.
So long ago.
What happened after that? Did the money come easily? Was it a bit of a slog? I know you had 2 different co-founders, I think, at the time.
Yeah. When you have the hype of something like Techstars, it definitely gives you some, it gives you some clout. But at the end of the day, we didn't have the numbers. It was a moment for me to go back to my mission. And I decided that we would let go of certain people. We would focus the company on pivoting and iterating, which was a hard decision to do. But what was the point of keeping a product up and funding that when it's not working?
Because people weren't booking classes or there were no users, or what was the problem?
They were coming and looking at the schedule data, but they weren't actually purchasing the classes. So they weren't actually going to class. And we kept changing the buttons. I think the day I knew is when we sent out an email saying go to class for free, and still no one went. I think the most transformative companies are ones that actually change human behavior. And so while I had made it easy to go and search, I hadn't motivated anyone to go to class.
So you decide you need to make this change, but you raised a little bit of money after Techstars, and then I think, according to Crunchbase, at least 2 years later, you raised your next round.
During that first year and a half, we raised roughly around $1 million+ after Techstars. I mean, we were good about our burn, right? So I had enough cash in the bank. I mean, that was one of my important points to even my team when they were like, wait, why are we switching? It's we have money right now. The worst thing you could do is wait for it to run out and with the wrong product. We actually had enough stamina and enough funding to kind of go through the next, year. But it was more of are we going to make the hard decisions to get and build a product that was going to actually get us to the next round of funding?
So you guys start building this other product and you run a promotion, right? And something changes.
what we ended up doing is, okay, let's go talk to these studio owners and figure out what they wanted. And what we realized, a lot of them were offering a first class for free. So what we did is we packaged up the first classes for free and built a product called the Passport, which was a one-month offering where people could go and try all these first classes for free as a new customer. And the bet we were making is, okay, people are going to do this and then go back and buy a package at these studios. So we were collecting ratings and reviews on every single rating and class that you went to. And, you know, my internal benchmark was 70% of people who gave something a positive rating would go back. And we weren't seeing that. We were seeing like 10 to 15% of people go back, which to me was, while it was great revenue for us and people were finally going to class and it was beautiful profit, it wasn't a good business model. I didn't want to build a one-month experience for my customers. I wanted to build a lifestyle where you stayed active and passionate. And for the business owners, I was actually not sending them any money. So when I fast-forwarded that in terms of like the business, in terms of the product, we had to make another hard decision of saying this is wrong. When we actually looked at the data, we saw that so many customers were actually buying the membership over and over again with different email addresses, which gave us some sort of sense of, wait, maybe this is a monthly subscription. We also did a survey, and 95% of them said they wanted to do this experience over and over again.
And that was visiting different studios around you.
So the variety was like a part of the magic. And we almost like stumbled upon that, how important that was. And it wasn't just like a one-month discovery thing. It was a part of people's way of life. We had a meeting and we were like, okay, there's something here. And we decided to iterate and build the subscription model as well. So we had the search engine up, the Passport, and the ClassPass model up at this time. And, you know, the team, we all were sitting there and we were kind of like, okay, what do we do? But we started getting such positive feedback on the subscription. People were now emailing me with things that were about like their life changing because of this product. And they felt confident. It wasn't even about like I went and worked out, you know, it was something bigger. And I think as an entrepreneur and a founder who had been doing this for like 3.5 years, and I did it because of my passion for dance, I felt like I had given them dance, like what dance was to me. In that moment, I just knew we kind of had hit that magic and that lightning that was going to be like revolutionary for that industry.
So you all took this product out to studios without it even like really formed, right? You said, we're going to start doing this thing. It's going to be $49 a month for unlimited classes.
49 was 10 classes.
For 10 classes. And you could do bar classes. You could do Pilates classes. You know, before, I think maybe the assumption was you're going to join a gym or you're going to be into yoga or you're going to be into bar.
Commitment to one studio.
Right. But not combining, like cherry picking what you wanted to do based on how you felt and how you wanted to work out that day.
I mean, and to be honest, technologically it was hard to do it because how are you going to look at all the information? And then also it just wasn't a concept anyone had really done. If you wanted to be a dabbler, you would probably have a gym membership because it was too expensive to do that, actually doing it with the studios.
So talk about how you get the pivot off and running, how you talk to investors about it, how do you talk to your team about it? How do you plant the flag and say, okay, guys, Classivity was cool, but now we're going to be ClassPass and we're going to do this whole new thing.
Well, so we had actually put ClassPass out before we changed our name. Basically what happened is we decided that we would try this other iteration, which would be the membership, which we launched in June of 2013. 3 months in, we started seeing this exponential growth with ClassPass, and it was like completely viral. We went from like 35 users to like 300, you know what I mean, in a matter of 3 months. And like that's exponential growth.
You mean 35,000?
No, I'm talking about like hundreds. I'm talking about like really small numbers.
Oh, wow. Right? So like actually 35?
35 people in our first month. I always say that to people because people want these bigger numbers, but we're building a subscription and a lifestyle and you need to figure out what your numbers are going to be. And for us, when we got to 1,000 members, we were at $1 million run rate. Wow. So to me, that's like what I was trying to get to, right? When you have a $100 subscription, that's what you're aiming for. What was so great is we saw the growth of ClassPass surpass the Passport. And I mean, Classivity as a search engine. And so what we ended up doing is in February of the following year, changing our name to ClassPass, rebranding. We shut down the search engine. We took out the Passport. And I actually remember one of my advisors, Andrew Weinreich, he always would say to me, just get rid of the Passport. Like, he could see this. You know, we kind of were like, well, it's like what gave us the variety and maybe people want the Passport and then we'll do ClassPass. And he was like, it's like crack to you guys. It'll be a chapter in your book. And I didn't fully understand at that moment what that meant. And now I totally understand what he meant. Sometimes you just have to be able to know that it's the wrong product and move on.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What was the initial thing that you offered to users as this new company?
With ClassPass, it was $99 for 10 classes. We had about 50 studios in New York City probably signed up at the time.
And $99 was a steal when you consider that a spin class around here in New York City costs, what, $30 a session at least?
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, we weren't working with a lot of the top tier studios. Like, these were a lot of, like, I would say, you know, like, studios that were had a lot of excess capacity, weren't really big names. I think we got the big names as the product kept growing, which was also a part of, like, the fun war stories that we have. Like, we didn't in the beginning have contracts with all the studios, but we realized, like, the brand names mattered. So we were, like, fulfilling a lot of these reservations manually without any integrations, just to see, like, we needed to figure out what the customer wanted. That's, like, the ultimate thing. That's what you need to do. You need to keep figuring out what the customer really wants. And we didn't know.
You had the tricky job of having two sets of customers, right? You had studios that you have to make happy, that you're partnering with, that you're paying checks to every month based on referrals. And you have people like me who use ClassPass and are signing up for classes and want the best prices. This is a problem that, like, Uber has the same thing with keeping drivers happy, keeping customers happy. It's very hard to balance the two. So how did you figure that out? And did you ever make mistakes with it?
One of the things that was really important to me, it's actually something I studied at MIT, which was, like, management of inventory and capacity utilization. And we never wanted to cannibalize. And so what we were trying to do is figure out where they had excess capacity, right? And that was something we built into the system from the beginning of saying, we're going to make available the spots that you're not selling. So this is incremental revenue, right? And so that was a really important part of, like, our value proposition for the beginning. And we also restricted how many times you could go to anyone's studio for that purpose as well. It was a matter of protecting. If you want to be a loyalist, we were like, please go sign up at the studio. Like, this product is not for that person.
Right, but you couldn't do all 10 classes at the same studio.
You can't, right. That was part of, like, the premise of getting you to say, like, let's just get people who actually were scared to work out. And we wanted to make it accessible for people to say yes. So then, obviously, a lot of our partners would have more inventory utilized and the classes would be more energetic and full. So that was really the premise. It was, like, started under and maintained under. Obviously, as we grew, we had to keep figuring out what those, like, inventory limits were and, you know, continue to build algorithms for our studio owners that kept optimizing their revenue. And we're still working on that. I mean, what's amazing is how much data we have to be able to now predict, you know, if you changed your schedule around, you would get this much more money. Like, those are the things we can do for our partners now because we have so much data historically on how many, you know, their 8 p.m. class on a Wednesday sells out.
How hard was it the first few years? And were investors actually interested in it? Did you find that it was hard to pitch them at first?
I think I had a lot of people who were like, Pyle, like, we love you, but, like, product's not there or, like, business isn't there. I never gave up, though. I mean, I think that's, as a founder and entrepreneur, you just keep hustling through it. I knew I'd figure it out. And as long as, like, you don't run out of money, which is the number one key, you're that's, like, your right to keep going. You have to keep making hard decisions. Like, I remember I needed a bridge round. And people were like, of course, because they were seeing.
Explain what a bridge round is.
So I needed, like, an extra $300K to kind of stitch between where I was with my capital and where I wanted to go. And I wasn't ready to go into a big round. And so it was awesome because I think people were just like, your progress. I always say investors invest in lines, not dots. And I was, like, giving them so many dots that were, like, so much better than the last time I had seen them. And I was keeping people in the loop. For me, the reservation number and our revenue trajectory, like I remember just sending charts of like the hockey stick to people. And so many of my investors, when I remember when they're like, when you texted me that, it was like, oh my God. You know, I remember sitting down with like Haley from Birchbox, you know, and I was like, here's what it looks like. And she was just like, show me that again, you know? And I feel like that was when I knew we had cracked something that was like really special. And that was like January of 2014.
I had investors emailing me saying, I've seen you write about Payal before. Do you know her? And can you intro me? That you had this serious demand that cooked up. I mean, VCs are kind of like, they're like, ooh, what's the new next shiny thing? I have to get into this hot deal. And you became that hot deal.
Yeah.
So what was it like when you hit that inflection point? Did you notice a change, or like, how do you deal with that as a founder?
I did notice the change. I remember like going out to raise my Series A and ending up with multiple term sheets when I had gone to Silicon Valley, probably like four times at that point and come back with nothing. This is when I met Fritz, and I was like, Fritz is the type of person I want involved in my company.
And Fritz Landman is your now CEO.
He's the CEO of ClassPass. It was one of those moments when I met Fritz, like I knew he believed in my mission. I was meeting all these people who I know are now chasing me because they saw traction, but I didn't know if they believed in my mission. And it's really hard to figure that out in 3 days when everyone's like, let's sign a term sheet tomorrow. And I had that struggle, and I remember, you know, Fritz and I chatted about it, and he was very much helping me with the fundraise. And I was like, I just don't know if I trust any of these folks, you know, and I don't know them, and I want the chance to get to know them. So I have multiple data points with them, right? The same way they now have multiple data points on me, it didn't feel fair. And so Fritz was like, you know what, I think I can get you the capital. So then he ended up leading my Series A and getting more involved in the company. And I said no to some really great people who actually got involved in the company in later rounds.
You know, you've had to make some tough decisions throughout the course of the company's growth and history.
Yep.
One of them is the pricing has changed.
Yep.
And it hasn't always been well received by users. There's been some screaming on Twitter and things like that. So there was this 99 beautiful price point for a long time where, I think, was it unlimited classes, or am I making that up?
It was unlimited for a bit. Yeah.
So for $99, you could get unlimited classes. So people were going to like literally a class every day sometimes.
Yeah.
And it was a huge discount. Like, because like I said, $30 could get you one spin class normally.
Yeah.
And then you change prices.
Yep.
Sort of seemingly out of the blue.
Yeah.
How did you make that decision? Why did you make it? And were there mistakes made?
It was $99 for 10 in the beginning, and we were getting data, and people were only going to 5. Like, that was like the original number, right? And it was this amazing thing where, you know, my CFO and I would always chat about this. He's like, you know, people die for engagement. We have like too much engagement now. It was this interesting thing where everything I had set out in the world to do from like this moment I started this company was like coming true from a product and consumer perspective. But it was breaking the business, right? In the sense of like, we didn't know how much people would work out. No one had ever done this before. I had no blueprint. The only way to actually test this was in a real life test. And so the first thing we did is we increased price. We didn't know where usage would settle. And, you know, it wasn't the right price. And then we actually realized as we were increasing price of unlimited, I was shutting out a part of the market that I actually wanted in the market. This product was meant for people to be accessible, and we were making it less accessible over time. So then we started launching the lower tiers. And as we started launching the lower tiers, the unlimited tier even deteriorated more in terms of its profit.
And so by lower tier, you mean a cheaper amount for fewer classes.
Exactly. Some people, they were like, I want to go to class, but they were like, I can do this for $50. But when Unlimited started going, we had to keep increasing the price on that. The value proposition was changing and the type of customer was changing. That's when, you know, we saw the success of the lower tier products and we were like, okay, these are great. People love them as much as they loved the Unlimited product. And so we had to make the hard decision to sunset our Unlimited plan. But that being said, we also made sure that few things, I would say. We made sure that we grandfathered a lot of them into like having 10 classes per month because we wanted them to keep trying it. And we also introduced bundles so you could keep going to class. We made like the UI as simple as possible. And we just launched video on demand too. And that was a very important thing for me as a founder to be like, we're going to give you a way to work out every day because that's what our premise is. We don't want to say like to be fit, you need to have lots of money. Like that is not the premise we started the company under.
So you go through all this, you've changed the price, you figure it out, you've iterated.
Right.
And how many markets are you in?
We're in 39 cities globally.
Okay. And how many users?
We're past 30 million reservations since we've launched ClassPass. So 2013.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Great. Wow. Yeah. That's tremendous growth. And so much so that a slew of copycats came out.
Yeah.
There's all these people that
was an interesting phase.
So how do you deal with that as a founder when you've got something successful that's working, that's hot, and then all these copycats come out and undercut your price or try
to? I mean, you know, it was an interesting phase in the company. I believe you win a race by looking forward, not behind. it became a little hard. There was this phase where I feel like every day I would like get to, you know, my desk and the team was talking about it and people were talking about it. And so we were like, all right, like this is ours to lose. That's sort of how I felt. So I think we just knew we had to, you know, take on the market and expand rapidly. And we did that. We went to 20 cities in a matter of 6 months.
Are you guys making money?
We're on track to be profitable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that? How do you balance how much to charge someone versus what it does to your bottom line? And how do you decide like when to toggle things?
I mean, I think we've now priced our product in a way that is sustainable for the company and it's great value for our customers. And at the same time, we're also innovating on the partner side to, you know, partner with them in terms of dynamic pricing. And, you know, we've always had like this one payment, one price for every class that we've paid the studios. And we've also started figuring out like what are ways we can even drive them more traffic with different prices. So we're also experimenting on that side of it. But at the end of the day, like for us, it's really, we have now realized like what the usage sort of looks like on the plans that are capped, which are easier than having obviously like an unlimited number of classes you can go to.
One other thing, as you were growing, a lot of people asked the question of Groupon. They said, you know, this has been kind of done before where you get this great bargain to go into a new place. Groupon did it. It was very successful for a while. It went public and then all of a sudden it didn't work. Was that a fair comparison to make? Or did you guys take anything that Groupon did and learn from it?
The member we were marketing to was somebody who was scared to walk into a fitness studio. They didn't know the price of a class. Like, yes, it's good that a lot of people do, but that actually the market we were actually, you know, creating were people who had really never done this before. We wanted to make sure this was seamless, easy. We were dealing with the excess capacity, not your prime time spots that were going to push out your loyal customers. So that was something we thought about from the beginning. And the other thing we thought about was the lifestyle of it.
Recently, you made the tough decision to not give up your baby. You're still very much involved in ClassPass, but you did step away from the CEO role. How did you arrive at that decision?
I think founders, like as they go through their company, the founder CEO role just fundamentally changes. One of the comparisons I always love to make is, you know, dance companies have an artistic director and an executive director, and they're not the same person, right? And I'm like a very creative person, and I think about my product from that like place of creativity and wanting to like improve people's lives. I went to MIT, I worked at Bain, but my magic is actually in my artist side, and I kept feeling like I was pushing away from it. And that's actually what built this company. And every single day I was like, I was getting further and further away. You have to build a team to be able to go back to that. And that's like one of my advisors always said, it's like your freedom to create lies in people. I looked around and I was like, who are the folks that I have around me? And Fritz and I have had such a great relationship and I trust him 100%. He knows exactly what I want to build. I don't know if I would make this decision if it was anyone else. And so it's been great. And I mean, he's been such a great partner and I love what I'm doing now.
It's got to be still a hard emotional decision to make. This is a role that you're stepping back from when you've had it for years. You've grown this thing from the ground up. The CEO title, there's something that comes with that.
The impact we have on people's lives to me is more important than any title anyone can carry. And, you know, the only thing, and I thought a lot about this, was I want little girls to believe that they can be CEOs. The best thing I could do, though, is be an empowered female and authentically doing what I love. That's the message I want to send, not, oh, go and do things you don't like because that's what the world needs, right? To me, I will be a stronger person if I am moving forward, doing the work I want and continuing to drive force and the purpose that I want to create versus doing what other people think I should be doing, right, which is never a way to live.
What you're saying, too, is that the role of the CEO changes as your company changes. It's very different than when you're starting out.
Absolutely.
To when you have hundreds of people that you're managing.
Right.
So what were some of the things that you found that you didn't like?
I felt like my day just became a lot of meetings and I wasn't finding time to actually like brainstorm and build my product and sort of think like creatively about what we were building and take those chances on innovation. And I knew I was like the lifeline to that, if that made sense. I wanted to free myself up to do it.
What are you doing now day to day?
Yeah.
What's the role of executive chairman?
Yeah, I mean, I think it varies for every executive chairman that's out there. I think as founder, for me, it's about focusing on the product and the member experience. So we just launched some really cool stuff. Now you can go back to studios, you know, at like a small premium. There's a video product that we just launched and that I'm continuously focused on and what we're going to be doing on like the digital era, which is so unbelievable and growing right now. Just how, you know, we were just talking about this, how digital and video is becoming such a prominent part of people's lives. And it's just, you know, I think there's a really great big fitness angle and a platform angle for ClassPass to have there.
Are you going to stick cameras in studios and let people stream it at home? Or what kind of videos?
Well, we're exploring a lot of things. I think the number one thing I would say is our vision is to make that studio experience come to your home, right? Because it's really important. We know how great these studios are, and not everyone can access them. You know, I think this is a part of like who we've always been. It's like great for the New Yorker who's next to five like bar studios and two spin places. But what about someone who's in the middle of Idaho? Mm-hmm. They can't do it.
As really a first-time tech founder, what were you surprised to learn? And what was the hardest part?
Some of the things that I've fallen in love with, which I wasn't expecting, were things like UX and design. You know, and I actually think it's such a new field that 5 years ago, I don't think people were like studying like user experience, right? I think it's so cool that like we have to now like think about like what's going on the screen. Like every inch of it kind of matters. So that's been really just like interesting for me as like a founder to kind of dive into. I think being in New York and like building a company here was a complete interesting learning lesson. And to be honest, to see the New York tech scene completely change and transform over these 5 years, I couldn't count like the number of entrepreneurs I knew on my one hand 5 years ago, right? Like now it's like unbelievable at how many like people there are and everyone's working at startups.
That was Payal Khadakia, the founder of ClassPass. Thanks so much for joining us, and you can listen to more episodes of Success, How I Did It on Acast or iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.